Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
When a nation comes together on buildrsa.co.za, it can only lead to a greater South Africa. All that's missing is you. Go to buildrsa.co.za to join the conversation, get involved in problem solving, and contribute to taking our nation to the next level. By South Africans, for South Africans. So, register for free now at buildrsa.co.za. The Great Africa. Together, we will build it.
A very good morning to you and a very warm welcome to this week's installment of Beyond Governance show here at 101.9 High FM. Yours truly is Nimrod Obombele. It is always a pleasure to share this space and time with you as we continue to shed light on some of the topical issues from the perspective of our esteemed guests who are pretty much knowledgeable and experienced in their respective field. Before we get into the gist of our conversation, allow me to dispense with the basic formalities with sincerity, though. Thanks, Howard Feldman and the Money Mayhem team for doing a sterling work. I also want to thank Vusi Mashinga, who is the producer of the show, Craig Guthrie on that, who's on the controller. Last but not least, Daniel Kastner, who's also the producer of the show. Gentlemen, thank you very much in advance for navigating the show to the delight of the audience and the listeners out there. Moving along, if you miss any of our previous conversation, not to despair, simply go to the website at High FM, look at Beyond Governance podcasts, and download any podcast and share your views with us via our socials. Our SMS line is 34519, Telegram is 0618951019, and your views and thoughts via my X handles are most welcome, which is @_@DrMbele. In today's conversation, we're putting yet another spotlight on government lapses. I'm sure you heard via various media houses and social media platforms about explosive affidavit by the former chairperson of VBS Bank and Vela Investments, Chivua Matoti, who implicated the Economic Freedom Fund leadership and former National Director General in some kind of shenanigans, which obviously contributed towards the fall of VBS Bank, which was later liquidated, if you recall, back in 2018. In making sense of these developments, I am joined by Ian Jogosberg, who is the director at Flaxman's Attorney. Welcome, Ian. Thank you very much for gracing Beyond Governance with your time once again.
Thank you, Imran. It's good to talk to you and your listeners again.
Fantastic. I just want to set the scene by looking at government lapses, by focusing our attention on two major scandals, which obviously have been brought to attention over the past few years. That is that of a VBS Bank, as well as a standoff. You know, when you look at the estimated looting at VBS, which amounts to around 2 billion rands, from the coffers, as well as Stanoff market capitalization, which dropped from approximately 20 billion rands to less than 2 billion rands, resulting in significant loss of around 18 billion rands in market value of Stanoff. These are obviously very big ticket items, which have huge ramifications for those particular entities, as well as the economy. Your overview in terms of where government lapses is in South Africa, and we boast ourselves as having sound regulatory and legal framework, which includes the codes of good practice. You know, your overall view when you hear and see these kinds of issues in your field as an attorney guiding and supporting entities to navigate these very same issues.
When I look at the overall picture, particularly if you look at VBS, yes, we've got, you can see in all the reports, there are a number of structures of corporate governance, both on the public side through the Municipal Finance Management Act, then on the private side via auditors, via internal governance, via the King Codes. Unfortunately, and certainly that appears to have been the case with VBS, None of this is proof against what appears to have been a massive criminal syndicate. There was dishonesty, fraud, corruption at every level of governance, starting from the municipalities who were, contrary to the provisions of the Municipal Finance Act, investing in VBS, then going into the bank itself, its executives, and even to its auditors. So you had at every level where some corporate governance should have or could have kicked in to stop this, there was a criminal element, or at least professionally negligent element, that was preventing the corporate governance from actually being properly implemented.
Those are very interesting insight indeed. We will obviously sink our teeth more on some of these specifics, because when you're talking corporate governance, it is multi-layered. You made reference to auditors, you made reference to the shareholders. So let's get more into those details after the short break.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. You haven't really missed a lot. We are just started. I'm joined by the one and only Ian Jacobsberg, who's a director at Flaxman Attorney, and he's giving us his perspective around governance lapses. We are obviously locating governance lapses in the context of what we've heard through various media platforms and government website on the VBS Bank as well as Stanoff. Before we took that break, Ian shared his overall view of a number of structures that exist in the context of municipality, making reference to Municipal Public Finance Management Act, and in the context of private sector King Code and the Companies Act. And in his view, certainly criminal elements crept in at every governance level, which led to a collapse of corporate governance, as it were. Having said that, Ian, clearly, the criminal syndicate have literally infiltrated both in public and private sector organization governance spaces, purely because I suppose this is clearly orchestrated mechanism that is fairly knowledgeable and experienced in these kind of issues. But taking a step back, when you look at the level of criticism leveled against the public sector companies as well as private sector organization in relation to fraud, corruption, maladministration, you name it, there tends to be a different connotation attached to it. For an example, in public sector, there's blatant corruption, maladministration, you name it. But in the publics, in the private sector organization space, we often hear words such as irregularities, financial irregularities. To what extent these discourses or these languages distort the grand scale of corruption in private sector? I mean, when you look at Stanoff, 18 billion rands dropped in literally days.
Yes, certainly. I think my take on it is that it's specifically the difference between public and private. In a private business, and VBS as a bank can be distinguished from that, even though it is technically was a private sector entity, and I'll explain why. But take a business like Stanoff. The motive or the reason for existence of any private business is to make a profit, and to make a profit for the people that own that business, being the shareholders. So for the most part, the affairs of a private sector organization are the affairs of the shareholders and the people they delegate to run that business for them. So there's possibly And one always accepts that entrepreneurship carries risk, and investment in a private sector business carries risk. So I think for that reason, it's possibly less stigmatized than when there is corruption, fraud, etc., in a public sector organization, which is using taxpayers' money, diverting funds that are supposed to be used for public benefit as opposed to the private benefit of their investors and shareholders for criminal ends. So I think that is probably why the language is a bit different in a public sector and a private sector context.
But surely that suggests that how we consume these kinds of disparities suggests that we are not really grounded in an understanding. I mean, when you look at the VBS, when you look at Starnoff as an example, it drew, there were a lot of investors, there were a lot of public sector investors. Your pension, our pension funds through PRC, were severely implicated, you know, because in as much as it is private, resource streams or investments also come from government, comes from private-owned entity, comes from state-owned entities which have invested in these things. Surely, as we proceed, there has to be a greater recognition that we should call a spade without sugarcoating it, and, you know, projecting that private sector is less corrupt than public sector. Your take on that?
No, I couldn't agree with you more. Corruption is corruption wherever it occurs. Certainly, one cannot say that there is necessarily less corruption in the private sector than the public sector, that because of the various regulatory statutes that govern the conduct of public sector bodies, there's perhaps more transparency and more access to information. But when it and I think that is the only difference.
No, thank you very much for that observation. One other issue that often comes to light when the governor lapses is the role of auditors. I mean, throughout in all these entities that have experienced governor lapses, one question comes up: where were the auditors? In the case of Starnoff, Deloitte came under severe criticisms, as much as in any other entities that we have known, that we know of. What could be the problem around the role of auditors in aiding or abating, or perhaps maybe not really being thorough and prudent in their diagnosis of financial records, which in the case of VBS as well as Starnoff, completely misled the public?
Yes, well, you may have seen in the media that KPMG, who were auditors of VBS, have recently just reached a settlement to pay an amount of about R500 million to the liquidators of VBS. The partner in charge of that audit has been disciplined by the Independent Regulatory Board for Auditors, may even face criminal charges. Certainly, auditors do have a role, a very important role, and if they are, and one does question where were the auditors and what were they doing. And as I say, in the VBS case, it's been highly publicized that the partner in charge of that audit, if not himself personally, but people close to him, had financial interests in VBS, which in itself was already a conflict of interest, is contrary to the ethics of the profession. And so the suspicion, and well, it's been accepted that he perhaps turned a blind eye to obvious irregularities because of the interests that people close to him had in that organization.
While we're still on the role of auditors, and again, one has to look at it in the context of a private business. You know, in your earlier utterances, you indicated that private business, very existence, is about creating shareholder value and maximizing profits. And one, obviously, we have inability or failure of auditors to pick up these irregularities as they should. But there's also the responsibility lies on the shoulders of the shareholders. I mean, it is well and good for shareholders to look at the bottom line and be happy to really, you know, clean the top and enjoy the benefits. When stuff really hit the fan, as it happened in all this organization, shareholders are found in wanting. What sort of lessons shareholders need to think about and reflect deeply on so that they avoid reputational risk? Because we all know that billions of rands are lost and trying to resuscitate an entity that is engulfed with that kind of magnitude, it's simply irreversible in some instances.
Yes, certainly. As far as shareholders are concerned, as I said earlier, one tends to feel, well, it's their investment, it's their money, it's their business. The shareholders, for the most part, you'll always get some very large controlling shareholders. And yes, it is often said that we do not have enough of a culture, tradition of shareholder activism where shareholders that hold significant stakes in companies really concern themselves with the affairs of the company. As long as their shares are maintaining value and they're receiving dividends, I think the tendency is, well, I invested in this company. That's the reason I invested in the company, either to grow the value of my shares. And as long as that appears to be the case, I'm not going to get involved any further. But yes, there probably should be a greater culture of shareholder activism than we presently have.
I couldn't agree with you more, because we, you know, in absence of shareholder activism, you know, we are likely to, because the implications are just wider than that of the shareholders who obviously have put their money, the other critical stakeholders that also suffer. I mean, employment opportunities, you know, for a lot of people, up in smoke, investment from either minority shareholders up in smoke. So it is important that, you know, that culture of active shareholder role is becoming more and more pronounced. As we continue, we're going to just take a break and come back in a second, because I really want to get your thoughts around the oversight structure, which obviously include the boards as well as the shoulder. Let's take a break and we'll be back in a second.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that most statistics for commercial and social research are tested for accuracy at a 95% confidence level? As specialists in the field, we do tests between 90 and 99% confidence levels. This is not to be confused with our name. Plus 94 is a celebration of the miracle post 94 in South Africa. We can still test the accuracy of your data at 94%. It is in our name to give you the confidence you need. Plus 94 Research. The science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Tembele. I am joined by Ian Jacobsberg, who is the director at Flaxman Attorneys. We are debunking the whole, you know, issues around governance lapses and making reference to what happens at the VBS Bank as well as Stanhoff, and of course a multitude of other entities where criminal syndicates infiltrated governance structures at all levels to loot those kinds of investments. Ian, before we took that break, the question obviously was around the role of the shareholder, which you articulated that there has to be more robustness in terms of the role of the shareholders, even though, you know, investment is about risk and most people are obviously interested in the value of their shareholders, of their shares and the, you know, and how dividends and can be accrued based on that. But surely that is a short-sightedness. And of course, when you look at the King report, it does call for active citizenship from the perspective of the shareholders, because it's no longer about the shared value, it's no longer about shared value, but shared value, which means we need to look at the broader ecosystem of entities as an active citizen, because those entities have responsibilities to communities which they operate, because they get license from those particular communities. How far do you think we are likely to move towards that particular trajectory, which has been depicted in King 4 as an example?
It's a difficult question because, yes, there are all these external stakeholders. When I say external, we do not have, for example, as they do, as they've had in Germany, an obligatory worker representation on the board. So, and avenues for access to information by people outside the board are limited. Shareholders in public companies can obviously get access to the annual reports, and the public can get access to the annual reports for the purposes of evaluating an investment. But there's very little at the moment, despite the code and the King 4 recommendations, advocating greater activism and greater involvement. The legal avenues through which it can be exercised are quite limited right now. And there's still a large, when you, if you're looking at the private sector, still a large element of self-regulation where public companies and companies that achieve the public interest scores have to have board committees and appoint independent directors and independent members to these board committees. And the theory is that having these independent directors and members will produce the requisite amount of internal regulation. There's very little public access to that information.
Surely that's something that moving forward, part of the broader reform agenda, there has to be a concerted effort to see how these legal revenues could be widened to ensure that external stakeholders such as communities have access to information that informs them on how those entities are being managed. I mean, we all know that annual reports don't really say much because whatever is being published, often is censored and has gone through rigorous, censorship, so to speak. And hence, these entities that have been scrutinized and found wanting, they have produced annual reports in the past, and nobody picked up anything until some whistleblower or until somebody, who's disgruntled, issue a defamatory statement. But going back to the issue of the boards, which are supposedly brought to bear or installed based on merit and competence. We have seen in VBS, via VBS, we've seen it as well as at Starnoff. I mean, we have cream investment bankers, legal aspects such as yourself, you name it, auditors, you name it, every single brain that you need in managing a multi-billion dollar and euro entity such as Starnoff. And yet the boards, irrespective of the position, independent, non-independent board members, they were also found wanting. What seems to be the problem in terms of oversight of those kind of entities?
I think firstly, brilliance is no guarantee of honesty. And you may get the most competent people, but if they're not honest people, their competence will be focused in the wrong directions. It's as simple as that. And then just going back to the previous point about access to information, I just do want to make the point that there is a very difficult balancing act because information and confidential information is a vital asset to every business. So as much as one would like to increase transparency, one does have to bear in mind that a business does have the right to protect its confidential information. And that is the tough balancing act that the regulators will have to consider.
My goodness, that's a very it's such an important and very powerful point that you've just brought to attention, because it's not obviously confidentiality. It is quite important because there are a lot of proxies, there are a lot of people who will not want to be known to be associated with a particular entity for a plethora of reasons. So it becomes very difficult for a business or even the regulator to personally bring to light those issues of confidentiality, because they also border on issues such as privacy, which is obviously guaranteed in the Constitution. So how far you want to protect privacy and disclosure in what is perceived to be in the best interest of the public can be a serious conundrum,
yes,
as you say.
Certainly.
And I really like the point around having a competent board and ethics, because you can have a brilliant mind, but if the ethical orientation of those board members is questionable, and hence, issues of conflict of interest creeps in to a point where people would obviously, drive their own personal agenda. In the same light, what could be the remedying of those kinds of issues? Because clearly, there's no end in sight, because these issues keep on cropping up every single day.
Yes, I wish I had the magic bullet. As I say, there are many, many interests and many priorities that have to be balanced. The law is there to try and regulate these things. When they come out, they need to be dealt with. They need to be dealt with. The ethical strength and the courage to come out and deal with them need to be lauded as heroes in our society. And if one looks at how the VBS Bank matter was exposed, the National Treasury picked up that the bank was making irregular investments. Municipalities were making irregular investments in a mutual bank, which they're not entitled to do. And there were one or two employees in some of these municipalities who had this, who became whistleblowers and who exposed the fact that the municipalities had made these investments. And but for those people, I think we'd still be sitting with the problem.
Absolutely, because yet another interesting point that you've just raised, because whistleblowers, instead of being lauded as heroes, they're obviously villains and victimized. And that also undermines any prospects of people coming out, because, public often, criticize people who comes out on the basis of what's the agenda, is there anything hidden, until the facts are actually out. Coming back to the National Treasury, we also heard from the media and statement issued to that effect that obviously one is presumed innocent until proven guilty, and they've just those could be an allegation. So it's very difficult for the likes of the former chairperson of VBS Bank making those kind of claims, because obviously the man siphoned close to two billion rands. So you have to take what he says with a pinch of salt. But in the same vein, you can't ignore how he implicated other people.
Yes, absolutely. And he's implicated some very high-ranking political figures that we all know about. Once those allegations are out there, they have to be investigated until guilt or innocence is proven.
Isn't the beauty of democracy and then the constitution that we have, because everybody is entitled to a day in court, and we can't judge people on the basis of public opinion, and there lies in another biggest problem when it looks at the governance issues. To what extent do you think the whistleblowing fraternity, we all know there are NGOs that push this particular agenda, trying to have it codified in law as well in codes, to a point where if there's been merit in issues raised by whistleblowers, there is protection. How far are we? Do you think there's an end in sight?
Once again, it's one of these things that we have the laws and we have the structures, but on the ground, there are far too many lapses. We know about whistleblowers, and there was one in Johannesburg a few days ago, simply are assassinated, as much as one then says, well, the law protects them. How much can the law protect you against a bullet?
Jesus, big one, mate.
Are these syndicates that are determined to protect because they're dependent on the corruption for their own well-being, this is going to be a continual problem. And it's not only a South African problem by any means.
Absolutely. Let's take yet another break as we gravitate towards the end of this very interesting conversation I'm having with Ian. We'll be back in a second.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that where markets are concerned, it's not easy to detect the difference between objective and subjective reality, or between reality and fantasy? The business's view of the consumer has serious bottom line implications. At Plus 94 Research, we help businesses cut through the uncertainty by gathering and processing real consumer intelligence through advanced scientific research methodologies. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I am joined by Ian Jacobsberg, who is the director at Flux & Nathalie. We are, we're getting perspective from Ian in terms of government lapses that you have seen, entities such as VBS, Steinhoff, and a host of other organizations where such issues have been raised. I mean, it's very clear and abundant based on Ian's perspective that irrespective of the governance structures or laws in the context of the public sector, you've got PFMA in municipalities, you've got Municipal Public Management Act, in government, in the private sector, you've got Companies Act, you've got King Codes, and these plethora of oversight or regulatory and legal framework don't seem to halt significantly the syndicate elements that has obviously crept in. At some point, we made reference to the role of the auditors, which should be strengthened to ensure that governance lapses kicked in from time to time. Ian also reflected a little bit more on the inability or unwillingness, or perhaps maybe the shortcoming on the side of the shareholder activism. And the interesting point that Ian raised there was that the existence of a business is to maximize profit. So in the main, majority of the shareholders are interested in the dividends and the share of the market. So that kind of one-sidedness obviously creates an opportunity for directors to be more corrupt or susceptible to corruption and maladministration purely because they want to appease the shareholders and obviously make sure that there are those kind of returns. One of the issues that Ian raised, which is quite important and very interesting, is issues around confidentiality, because information within each corporation is an asset and which has to be protected. On one hand, you also need to disclose. And the disclose obviously the regulatory environment requires a very fine balancing act between what is perceived to be in a public interest and what also perceived to be in a private in a private interest. So that kind of field is quite very murky and difficult to navigate. So that's one other brilliant point that Ian shared with us. The other point that Ian shared with us is the old point of boards. We know that boards are bestowed in those kinds of positions to protect interest of the entity and create value. But unfortunately, to Ian's points that you could be brilliant, because in all these entities we have very smart people, very brilliant people, but brilliance and ethics don't necessarily go hand in hand. You could be brilliant, but your ethical orientation and disposition could be completely skewed towards self-interest, towards self-preservation. And in the process, there are a lot of people that get harmed and hurt. And the other point that Ian raised, which is quite significant, is the whole point of whistleblowing, and which unfortunately, laws are there, as he puts it, to try and protect whistleblowers. But instead of us as a society hail them as heroes. We often vilify them, and some of them, they get assassinated to a point that you've just raised now, that you have laws, but laws don't necessarily protect you against a bullet, because you also have to be fearful of your life. So these are very interesting points that Ian has shared with us on this glorious moment, and which I think are somehow giving you a benefit of understanding the broader complexities of governing lapses, which will require each and everyone to be on a lookout on a daily basis, purely because these issues are very complex. Ian?
Yes, certainly. There's a lot to look at and a lot to consider. And we're certainly, society in general is very well aware of these problems. And I think the only thing one can say is one has to be vigilant, and one has to call these things out whenever one sees them. That is where all of us who are involved in every level, whether it's on the legal side, the auditing side, the business side, have to commit ourselves to conducting ourselves in an ethical way and exposing where it appears unethical or illegal conduct.
That's a tough call indeed, given where we are as a society. Ian, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. It has been absolutely beautiful having your thoughts and insights on a very delicate and complex issues on government lapses, which we're seeing in both private and private sector organizations. I'm hopeful that these kind of conversations, as they evolve, they sensitize everyone else, particularly individuals who sit in those kinds of boards and executive management, because they are obviously constitute the line of defense and against these kind of issues.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you and hearing your thoughts as well.
Thank you very much indeed, Ian. The feeling is mutual. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much. That was Ian Jacobsberg, who is a director at Ed Fleshman Attorneys, giving us his insights and very interesting observations based on the application of the law when it comes to issues of corporate governance lapses that you've seen in entities such as VBS as well as Starnhof. These are obviously complex issues that from time to time we need to refer back to. We all know that there are a whole lot of criminal syndicates that have infiltrated governance structures, both in public and private sector organizations, which undermines the growth and prospects of this beautiful country of ours. Having said that, we're going to have to leave it, Jay. It has been absolutely beautiful, and hope your mind and thoughts have been slightly stretched so that you appreciate the complexities of these issues and feel really for those that unfortunately have to deal with this kind of issues, because these are not easy issues to deal with. Having said that, enjoy your day further. Shalom.
Beyond Governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa, is proudly sponsored by Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Did you know that most statistics for commercial and social research are tested for accuracy at a 95% confidence level? As specialists in the field, we do tests between 90 and 99% confidence levels. This is not to be confused with our name. Plus 94 is a celebration of the miracle post 94 in South Africa. We can still test the accuracy of your data at 94%. It is in our name to give you the confidence you need. Plus 94 Research. The science of decision making.